Welcome into the Locked On Knicks podcast. We are back with draft expert Jonathan Wasserman of Bleacher Report. He just released a new mock draft, so go and check that out. But Alex, today, this episode was a little bit more about us. First episode, we asked Wass for as much intel as he could possibly give us. This time, we have our own outstanding questions, and we wanted answers. So we sort of get into what the Knicks could do later in the draft.
Yeah, and not just that, you know, we ask about Patrick Williams pretty early on, just to sort of get a gauge for why he's not connected to the Knicks more, particularly when we heard in the last episode that, you know, Wasserman thinks that the Knicks are definitely, you know, in play for Isaac Okoro, you know, with a similar kind of skill set, why maybe they wouldn't be looking at Patrick Williams as well. Then, you know, we talk about some of his favorite guards towards the end of the first round and for that pick 38 for the Knicks, you know, guys they could potentially look at, especially if they go with a wing early. We talk about that infamous Devin Vassell workout video and how much that's affecting Vassell's stock, which, spoiler alert, not very much. And then, you know, we finish off talking about a couple other late round guys, Robert Woodard, Killian Tilly, and Skylar Mays, who's someone that Wass is really high on compared to consensus. So that's all coming up next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I think we see Willis coming out. There he comes right now. Puck left, now fires it, and he's good, and he's fouled,
Anthony for three, bang, that one goes down,
this is all about, back up off the glass, it's good, RJ Barrett,
becomes infectious.
Yeah, I was going to ask you specifically about the Knicks' interest in Patrick Williams, because it feels like we've heard at different points, like every other wing connected with the Knicks, like you've heard about Vassell, Okoro, a ton, some of the guards like Killian Hayes. Like I haven't really heard anything specifically with the Knicks in regards to him, and that was a little surprising because the Knicks are typically the team that likes to make the upside play and likes to make the big splash. And I mean, to your point on Williams, it seems like his floor, I mean, even relative to guys like Vassell and Okoro, like maybe isn't like quite as low as like some people viewed it like a few months ago, where he was considered more of like a late lottery option. I guess what I'm trying to get to is like, have you heard anything in regards to the Knicks' interest in him? And what do you think about like his ultimate ceiling as a player? Because you hear about his attributes like size, weight, ball skills, shooting. And like, I was thinking like, weren't people saying like sort of similar things about Paul George coming out of Fresno State? And on one hand, I think that's a ridiculous name for me to throw out because I haven't watched nearly enough film on either of them in college to make that comparison. But just in terms of like a loose outline, like I feel like if teams were sort of thinking like of like falling in love with him and like thinking, oh my God, like what could this guy be in the best case scenario? We really don't want to miss out on that guy. That was the name that came to my mind, but I'm sort of curious on those two things.
So Pat Williams, first of all, I haven't heard any direct ties with the Knicks, so I don't have anything there. They're certainly going to do their homework on him. You know, I don't know if they like him more than anybody else. I'm sure he's in conversations, you know, behind closed doors, but I don't know how much they like him. I certainly hope they consider him. He's number 7 on my board, and every day I consider moving him up higher, just because I think in this particular draft, he is a gamble worth taking, even though he's got a lot to improve. He's the youngest NCAA prospect in this draft, just turned 19 years old. And who he reminds me of, in terms of we're talking about ceilings, he reminds me of the forward version of Adebayo. So in Adebayo in college was a power player, right? I totally missed on Adebayo. I think I had him early 20s, something I'll always regret. And in Kentucky, you play a role. And in Florida State, you play a role. Like, you don't go outside of your box at Florida State just like you don't do at Kentucky. And suddenly we find out in the NBA that Adebayo can pass and he can dribble. And he could shoot mid-range jump shots. He didn't do any of that at Kentucky. His stats didn't say any of that. The film never showed any of that. And Pat Williams is smaller. He's a forward version, a wing slash forward version, 6'8", powerful player. That's what immediately pops with him, right? He's 6'8", 230, looks like a football player. But if you look at the film and you look at all these possessions of him handling and pick and rolls and passing with his left hand off the dribble and pulling up in the mid-range and taking step backs around the elbows, and you know, he didn't hit a lot of threes, but he looked pretty comfortable when he took them. And these are just flashes. You know, he only averaged 9 points a game. This was not consistent occurrences. They were flashes. But for the youngest prospect in the draft, and based on what I hear about his work ethic and the type of player he is, he's the guy who's going to maximize his potential. If these flashes turn into regular occurrences, he's got one of the most unique trajectories of any prospect in this draft. They're not 6'8", 230-pounders who run pick and rolls. I mean, he was 10 of 20 scoring into pick and rolls. He shot 41% on pull-ups. Like, there wasn't a large sample size of each of these possessions, but if they become regular weapons in his arsenal, the pick and roll ball handling, shooting off the dribble, stretching the floor, obviously the powerful finishing, the defensive playmaking is there no matter what, because if that's just what comes with his body. But if these skills continue to build, and again, with his window being just turning 19 and his you know, reputation for working, then to me, he's just a gamble worth taking. I don't think you're passing on any can't miss guys at number 7 or 8. So to me, that's what I see with Williams.
Yeah. Would you say, this is something that I wonder about with Williams too. I mean, I feel like I hear, you know, I've heard from you and I've read, you know, elsewhere that his ceiling is obviously really, really high. You know, he definitely has the intangibles. There might be that, you know, the sort of Florida State masking of his skills, like what you were saying, you know, because they kind of get asked to play in a certain role and, you know, not really stray from it. And in many ways, it's, you know, in Florida State, it's just like what you said with Kentucky, where they're just, that's sort of like their own way of getting these guys ready for the NBA, is like kind of putting them out of their comfort zone, making them do different things to, you know, hone their skills prior to getting to the NBA. And then when they get to the NBA, they sort of get unleashed. Like Carl Anthony Towns is the guy that I always think about too. Like, he didn't shoot a single three-pointer in college, even though I know, you know, I saw him in high school a couple of times and he used to shoot threes constantly in high school. I would be surprised if he shot one at Kentucky. I don't think he shot a single one, and they had him basically play exclusively in the post. Mm-hmm. And that's just kind of what those coaches do at Kentucky and Florida State. But I'm kind of curious, like, what you think is, you know, you were just talking a minute ago about how Okoro, you know, has a defensive reputation and needs to show some growth shooting the ball and stuff like that to reach his full potential. But his floor seems really stable, and that's an attractive thing to teams. To me, at least, based off everything I've seen and read, you know, with Williams, it seems like his floor is probably pretty stable too. Like, what's your read on his floor as a player? Like, do you think there is a world where he kind of becomes just one of those, if things don't pan out right for him, that he's just kind of one of those uber athletic guys that can't really do anything? Or, like, to me, it seems like he at least has the defensive ability to pretty much always be out there as just a defensive player, even if the shot and stuff never fully comes around.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really think I know I was talking about, like, the risk is worth the reward, but the risk, that really is also saying that there really isn't much risk. With his body and his age and the skill set that he has, it seems like impossible that he doesn't improve a little bit skill-wise over the next couple of years. And so if he just comes in and he ends up being an okay shooter and an okay passer and an okay defender, I think there's enough there when you package it with his physical abilities that, like, he can't be a bad player. I mean, or he can't be a non-factor. I mean, he's going to be a rotation player no matter what. I think he's got a high floor too. And again, one of the more unique ceilings in the draft. I know this is a bad comparison, but in my mind, I don't know why he pops out. But like a guy like Marvin Williams, who just never really improved, but he stuck around for like 15 years.
Yeah.
Because he was just like steady and just did kind of little things and never one thing too great, but always had a role. There was always a team willing to use him. There was always a rotation that he managed to play 15, 20 minutes in. So I don't know. That's the type of floor I see with him.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what I like about him too. And we had draft prognosticator PD Webb on the pod at one point. He was sort of making the same case. Like, he's just like you look at like the archetype of guys who stay on the floor in the playoffs, like he's just that type of build. He just doesn't seem like someone, like he seems like a little bit matchup proof, at least defensively. And like, obviously whether or not that's true offensively is contingent on how good of a shooter he becomes. Like how much that passing and ball handling continues to come along. But he just strikes me as someone who will be playing in important playoff games for a long portion of his career. And to me, that's sort of a microcosm of this whole draft, where I think there are more guys than people think who fit that mold, given that it's considered a relatively weak draft.
Just a reminder, today's episode is brought to you by Built Go. Built Go makes you the best at whatever you do. Make sure to break through your wall, whether it's a mental or physical wall, break through it with Go every day. Built Go comes in easy to take 1.5 ounce packages. You put it in your briefcase. You know, who uses briefcases anymore? Let's be honest, you can put it in your pajama pants right before that Zoom presentation. You can put it in your golf bag to power through the back nine. That is a very COVID-friendly activity. Or you could put it in your pocket just to get through the day. Wherever you're going, whatever you're doing, you know, Built Go is there for you to help you out. Built Go is the best workout gel on the market. It's like a 5-hour energy without that crash feeling. Plus, it's all natural, so it's better for your body. You're not going to get a stomach ache. I can say I took Built Go. You know, they were nice enough to send me some. I took them before my workouts, and they're some of the best workouts that I think I've ever had. I managed to actually put on, you know, a lot of weights onto my exercises and get stronger in a very short amount of time after my gym reopened from COVID. And Built Go comes in 3 delicious flavors: peanut butter honey, chocolate coconut, and chocolate mint. Personally, my favorite is the peanut butter honey. Built Go is sort of the consistency of honey, so it really fits. And that flavor I found to be particularly good if you're really into peanut butter flavor in general. But you might be wondering how Built Go works so well. That's because it combines energy gel with collagen protein. So collagen protein is fast absorbing, it gets into your system fast, and it's easy on the stomach. Again, I can confirm. I had Built Go on an empty stomach a number of times, never had any issues. It's loaded with good stuff to ignite your work and your workout. It's got beta-alanine, B3, honey, and a kick of caffeine. And it's got vitamins B6 and B12, enough for 10,000% of your daily percentage, which keeps you going all day. The collagen protein also promotes joint, soft tissue, hair, and skin health. So it literally makes you look better on top of giving you the energy you need to get through whatever comes through your life. So if you're interested in picking some Built Go up for yourself, visit BuiltGo.com and use promo code LOCKED and you'll get 20% off your next order. Again, use promo code LOCKED for 20% off at BuiltGo.com. Let's go.
John, I remember on Macri's pod, you said something along the lines of like the guys in this draft between 15 and 40, which is obviously a very wide range, are fairly interchangeable. I'm curious how that plays out in your mind in terms of the Knicks' potential pursuit of a point guard. And like, obviously, like I think given where the Knicks roster is at, maybe outside of center, like the goal, like just about every pick will be to take the best player available. But just from a value perspective, I'm kind of curious what you think like would be their ideal outcome, because I know you've noted that they like Kyra a lot. He was a guy that they took out to dinner. It seems like he's gaining a little bit of traction in the lottery and could certainly go as high as the 8th pick with the Knicks. But then there are all these guys, like maybe even like a little higher and at 27 that the Knicks could potentially take. Like I know Ramsey's someone that we haven't even, I know he's more of a 2, but he's someone we haven't even really brought up. You have the Knicks taking him in both mock drafts. You mentioned on Macri's the scenario where the Knicks could trade up for Cole Anthony at 27. Like there's a million names like Malachi Flynn, Tyrell Terry, Trey Jones, Peyton Pritchard, Cassius Winston, Grant Riller, on and on and on and on. I guess if I were to like paint like a best case scenario draft night for you, and that involved the Knicks taking a point guard, who would it be and what spot? Because for me, I think in my mind, it's someone like Malachi Flynn at 27, but I'm curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I said that in Macri's pod too. Malachi Flynn is my guy in terms of the non-elite point guards or perceived non-top point guards in this draft. I think if you get Malachi Flynn at number 27, he's top 20 on my board. So of all the guys that you mentioned, I mean, I do have Kyra Lewis ahead of him. Other than that, I'll take Flynn over Cole. I do like Tyrell Terry, and Terry is getting a lot of steam as well. I don't think he's going to be there at 27. He could be gone in the late lottery. I think Terry has a little more. I mean, there's just a little more. He's you know, 3-4 years younger, and just a little more sizzle and shooting to his game, given his age, I think there's just you want to gamble a little bit more on Terry. But I feel pretty damn good about Malachi Flynn playing immediate minutes. And of all these guys who are like the older guys, I mean, I'd say if I had to pick one guy who's going to become a starting point guard in this league for a long time, it would be Flynn. I mean, he's just good at everything. And the knock on Flynn is what he looks like physically. I guess he's 6'1". I forget his updated weight. He's not a great athlete, but we've seen too many point guards over the last how many years overcome physical challenges with skill and intangibles. And I think like Flynn checks out 10 out of 10 in skill and intangibles. To me, it wouldn't be worth trading up for Cole Anthony, although I'm higher on Cole Anthony than some. I'm kind of right in the middle based on what I've heard. I think I have Cole 17 on my latest big board. If you can get Cole at 27, that's pretty cool too. I'm guessing he goes before then, and Flynn may have a better chance to be there. But yeah, of all those guys, like Trey Jones, and I like Devon Dotson. You mentioned Pritchard, and
it seems like there's like 50 point guards.
There's so many, there really are a lot of point guards, and it's honestly easy to picture every single one of them finding some type of backup role. But as one scout said to me, he's like, as good as all these point guards look, like they can't all play in the league. I mean, there's not enough spots, and the point guard position is so competitive that some of these guys are going to get left behind a little bit. But there are certainly a lot of good ones, and Grant Riller is a guy to me who I have as a top 25 guy, probably more of a scorer, but I don't think he gets talked about enough in terms of the guys that we just mentioned. But to me, if we're talking about ideal pick at 27, it would be Flynn. And then also 38, I won't go too long, but 38, like Nico Mannion could fall to number 38. I mean, I think that's a fine pick if you can get him that late.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, there's really potentially a scenario where I think the Knicks could end up taking 2 point guards out of this draft, potentially, or at least 2 guys that profile as point guards. Maybe even if they get a Riller or something, he maybe isn't the guy that you want starting and running your team necessarily, but he's a guy that could come in off the bench and nominally play the point guard and create for himself and maybe create a little bit for others and score some points, certainly, which has been a useful skill. Maybe be like the new Alonzo Trier for the Knicks, but hopefully with a little more interest in passing the ball than Trier had. I did want to bring up, not to divert, for this has been a very point guard centric show, but I want to bring up one thing, sort of an infamous thing from about a week or two ago, and get your opinion on it and hear, you know, what you've been hearing. But I'm curious if you've heard any feedback about the Vassell video, the infamous video that some poor reporter put online. I don't know if she necessarily realized like the firestorm that was going to become of it. but it was, this video surfaced of Vassell shooting around, and he was, for a guy who normally had a pretty high release point and a high shot, he was bringing the ball like all the way behind his head, and almost like the best way I can think of is like trebucheting it and releasing it almost like on his head, from what it looked like starting his wrist flick like on his head, compared to his normally really nice long extension jump shot that he did at Florida State. This of course got everybody freaking out. Everybody all of a sudden saying, oh my God, I don't want to take Devin Vassell. Nobody should work on their, nobody should like destroy a perfectly good jumper during the draft process. And he's just like the latest in a long line. Everybody was losing their minds. Vassell and his camp presumably were the ones that got the video taken down, but it lives on forever because it's the internet. So people are still sharing it and still, freaking out about that. But they claim that that's not his jumper form, that he hasn't changed his form at all. I think it's entirely possible. It looked almost like the end of a workout. Like maybe he was just screwing around, and was just messing around. I think people do that. You can't have it on 24/7, shooting shots exactly how you would shoot them in game. Maybe he was just messing around and being like, hey, look, I can shoot it from here and still make it. But whatever the case, have you heard anything about teams maybe being scared off by this, or or just any feedback that's come out in general based off that video, because prior to that, I think he was looked at as a very, very safe pick. And I feel like ever since that video came out, I've just seen a lot less discourse about Vassell in general.
This is another example of like Twitter. Like the NBA is not Twitter.
Yeah.
Nobody in the NBA is looking at that video of two shots. But did they go in, by the way? Did those shots go in?
I believe they both went in. I know for sure at least one of them went in. Yeah.
I mean, like, I talked to his assistant coaches. They were like totally adamant that he didn't change his form. And honestly, I didn't even notice it at first. I because he always had that high release. This was like, I guess after I saw the firestorm, I re-looked back and he looked more like Marcus Camby. Like, but it wasn't so noticeable to me. And I'm telling you, nobody in the NBA is just looking at that video and moving him down their board. That's like one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard. So his stock is not changing from a video of two shots. And just remember, and for everybody, like the firestorm you heard was a bunch of people on Twitter. Like that's not the NBA. It's not the NBA front offices going crazy over it. His stock isn't falling. I haven't been in the gym with him, so I can't say if he did or didn't change his form, or like you said, it could have just been two shots at the end of a workout. When I shoot around, I do the same thing sometimes and like shoot it really high or like try different new things. I would say if he did try and change his mechanics at this stage, I'd shake my head. But I haven't heard that. They've been pretty adamant that he has not changed his mechanics. He's got a really high release to begin with, which I think is pretty helpful, honestly. He gets that shot up over anybody, and he gets off pretty high off the ground and good size, good length, like 40% back-to-back years at Florida State from downtown, although not on a lot of volume. I would not overreact to that video, particularly since I think they went in.
Yeah, I'll just add before Gavin, I'll throw it to you to like take the next question, but that was about the answer I was expecting, but I just wanted to hear it from you anyway. I figured that you would say like, it was a 2 second video, you know, of course everybody freaked out because everybody's bored. It's the middle of the like longest NBA offseason ever, especially all the teams that are looking at, you know, potentially drafting Vassell have been out of it for months now. And so anybody whose team like the Knicks was linked to Vassell would look at that video and be like, oh my God, I need a reason to pick this guy apart right now because I'm
bored. Also seems like it seems like on Twitter, people are more crazy with details on Twitter than NBA teams. Like sometimes I'll bring up stats and like the team will totally be like, I've never heard that, nor do I care about it. You know, sometimes because people on Twitter have like nothing to do and they always want to find the new stat or new detail that nobody else found, like they'll bring it up. But teams aren't that crazy. I mean, I think they're more crazy when it comes to detective work, learning about the person and making phone calls to friends and family. I don't think they dive as deep into some of the stats and some of the film and, you know, like his hip turned like this way on one possession and his feet are too small or his little tiny things that I see on Twitter that like NBA teams don't go so crazy about.
Interesting. You mentioned Nico Mannion a little bit earlier for the Knicks at 38. I guess I just kind of wanted to get your feel. Who would be like your dream guy for the Knicks that could potentially be in that range? I think the deeper dives I've done, the name I've sort of fallen in love with is Killian Tilly out of Gonzaga. I think the issue is there are probably a lot of NBA teams that think the same way and say, oh, if that guy can somehow stay healthy, he's just going to be way, way better than that spot. So I don't know if he's realistically someone who could be there at 38, but who's sort of that person for you who you say, like, if this guy's at 38, he's an absolute steal for the Knicks?
Well, let's see. I mean, I guess if you're following NBA draft Twitter, Desmond Bane, you've already written him off being there at number 38, but Bane to me would be, you know, maybe 2 months ago, Bane was considered an early second rounder. And for those who don't know, senior, but just a total pro and has a skill set that is just like guaranteed to translate shooting, passing, defensive IQ. So to me, he would be ideal, but it sounds like he's got a chance to not only go first round, but possibly mid first round from what I'm hearing. Ideally at 38, I mean, I guess it really depends on what they do at 27 in terms of positions. But let's see. go down the list. I mean, I do like Devon Dotson. Grant Riller, to me, also will probably be there at number 38 from what I hear. Draft Twitter is certainly higher on Grant Riller than NBA teams. You know, I talked to a scout the other day. I was like, where do you have Riller? He's like, he might get drafted. I mean, some people have like top 20. I have him early 20s, but that just goes to show not everyone really buys in to Riller. I love Skylar Mays from LSU. He's probably, if I had to pick like deep sleeper of the draft, like second round sleeper of the draft, it would be Skylar Mays. So he's somebody I'd personally be interested in. Yeah, and those are the guys. And so Killian Tilly is definitely a guy I'm high on too. I have him in my 30s. In fact, I'll just tell you this straight up. I talked to his agent the other day because I'm trying to find out information on Tilly. I haven't heard anything. He said, I'm not revealing anything until November 18th. However, everything with Tilly will come down to the medicals. And that's what every single scout you ask says the same thing about Tilly. It'll all come down to his medical reports. And honestly, if he checks out fine, then he's got steel written all over
him. Yeah, I mean, he certainly, just from watching film of Tilly, like, it seems like if he didn't have these very considerable health concerns about his long-term health based off just being seemingly the sort of big guy whose body just was not ready to be that big, you know, his skill level, all various things that you would want out of a modern day stretch NBA 4-5 player is pretty ideal, I think.
Yeah, I mean, how many guys shoot over 40% from downtown every single year they're in college, and also be 6'10 and be a good passer,
and a somewhat decent interior defender? Like, I think that kind of gets underrated with him, but to me, yeah. I thought he manned the inside pretty well. I mean, he's not like Mitchell Robinson, you know, but he's pretty damn good, I think.
Right, he won't get you shot blocking, but he makes good reads and has a good feel. Just very good, fundamentally sound player. And another guy who you kind of brought up before, but I didn't really touch on and really haven't talked about him that much, is Jamias Ramsey from Texas Tech, who, I don't know, he could be there at 38. If I had the Knicks, I'd certainly consider him at 27. I think he's undervalued kind of the same way like Lou Dort was undervalued last year, where Dort was inefficient here and there and made some bad decisions. But if he kind of just gets a role where he could play to his strengths, and Dort is a totally different player. He's more of a defensive specialist, but Ramsey is kind of the opposite, an offensive specialist, a 6'4", good athlete, and just a pro shot maker and somebody who could put the ball in the basket from every level of the floor, 42% from downtown, picturesque mechanics, makes bad decisions. He loses his guy on defense, but I think you're nitpicking if you take that into consideration too much at number 38. So I think just like the Knicks with Mitchell Robinson, when they took him second round, he was a high upside, considered high risk, high upside guy. I think the Knicks are going to be looking for upside anywhere they can find it. And Ramsey, to me, if he's there at 38, would have pretty rare upside for a guy available at 38.
So I wanted to bring up one other guy that honestly, I don't even know it. You know, it doesn't really matter to me if he's been linked to the Knicks or whatever, but I've just been curious about him. So I wanted to get your thoughts on him because he intrigues me as a potential fit for New York. And that's Robert Woodard. You know, he shot over 40% from three this year, but the volume was a little low. Mm-hmm. I've seen him described anywhere from, you know, he's like 6'7" and actually is a really pretty plus wingspan. He's like, I think it's a 7'1" wingspan, if I'm not mistaken. You know, so it's like 6 inches bigger than his height, which is pretty solid. And I've seen him listed anywhere from like people think he's like a big shooting guard all the way to like a small ball four. And my inclination based off, you know, the little bit that I've done on him is probably more like a small ball four. Because I don't see shooting guard out of him. But I'm kind of curious what your take is on him. You know, he was a sophomore this year. Little on the older side for a sophomore, like he's, I think, over 21 years old already. But, you know, what's your take on his game? Like, do you think that the shooting is for real with him? Because, again, he shot 40%+ this year after shooting like 27% the year prior, but he only had something like 70 attempts, I think, overall this year from three. So it's relatively small sample size. And how do you see him projecting, you know, going into the NBA?
Yeah, so Woodard, he wasn't on my radar coming into the season, but he popped pretty early for me. He had a big game against Villanova early in the season. And that kind of put him on the radar. I'll tell you what, I'm not super high on him. I like the idea of him, and I think that's what everyone is behind, the idea of a 230-pound shooter. Like you said, 43% from downtown, but I question the volume. I question the fact he shot 64% from the free throw line. For a guy who's 230 pounds, grabbed 6.5 rebounds, which bothers me. Doesn't add anything as a passer. You know, analytically, he wasn't very good. If you're buying Woodard, by the way, he's a good, really good defender. I think he's got the chance. That's what's going to give him a chance. It's his defensive versatility, defensive toughness. One of my favorite defensive possessions of the season was, I think, against Mississippi State. And for like 30 straight seconds, he was guarding the ball just by switching and running around. And he ended up being the guy contesting the shot at the rim. But if he's not a plus shooter, then forget about it. He doesn't add enough value offensively. And one make in 33 minutes. And then again, 64% from the free throw line after 58% from the free throw line last year. No passing, no rebounding. No creation to his game. You're just really, really banking on him being a good shooter. And we just haven't seen enough jump shots through 2 years for me to be really sold.
All right, John, this is the final question, at least for me. I've been asking this to every draft guy we have on. Relative to consensus, and again, it's most likely someone you've already mentioned, and that's fine. Who's the single player in this draft that you like the most, I guess, compared to just about everyone else?
Skylar Mays, who I mentioned before. I think I'm the only one I've ever seen. And I don't look at people's draft boards. I know there are draft guys out there who, like, I don't look at – I just keep my eyes on my own. Like, I look around. I'm curious to see what's going on out there, and it's good for conversations. I haven't seen anybody with Skylar Mays first round. I have him 23, I believe. And my reasoning for liking him is really, it's tough to even put into words. I just see a pro. The same questions I had about Malcolm Brogdon, where I said, Brogdon's not going to make it. He's not going to be a starting caliber point guard. Maybe he's a backup. Are kind of the same questions you ask about Mays. And I don't want to get beat twice that way. He doesn't have great posture. He's not super athletic. There's no real position. Is he a point guard? Is he a shooting guard? These are the questions why teams kind of have him more as a mid-second rounder. But he checks boxes. He does everything well enough. I think he's just a very crafty guy who compensates for limited speed with good footwork and IQ. And if he's not going to be an NBA player, he's going to be a doctor. I mean, that's the road he's on. That's how smart he is. And just a super high character kid and just somebody you want to bet on. And I think he's one of those guys who fails the eye test totally, but is going to make a lot of people feel silly.
All right. Well, John, this has been great. Thanks so much for, taking time to come and talk to us again. And, give us some more great insight into what's going on here. I'm really looking forward to this new mock draft that you have dropping. You had mentioned prior to the show that maybe you would tease a little bit about what would happen with the Knicks there, but did you want to tease that a little bit and, pump up anything else that you have coming up soon?
I'll flat out tell you, I have the Knicks taking Isaac Okoro.
There we go. All right.
I pretty much sold it on this podcast. I said it on Macri's podcast. I just think that that's what they're going to do at this point. I've originally had them taking Vassell. I think other than the mock drafts I did with the trades, I think I had them taking Vassell in the first couple right out of the lottery. That was with really just pure speculation. But I think with a little more information on what's going on around them and what's going on with them, Okoro was the guy I have taking them taking at number 8. I guess you'll have to check out to see who they have taking it 27, but I have a lot of content. I think something coming out every day up until draft night. So, if you're bored and you want to keep reading about the same guys over and over, I'm your guy.
I can say I definitely do.
Yeah. I was going to say you managed to, even if you talk about the same guys, which how could you not, quite frankly, with the point that we're at in this off season? I think that you tend to add something new to the conversation each time. So
yeah, appreciate
I'm sure I could speak for everybody else too in saying that. But thank you so much, John, for coming on. We really appreciate you taking the time and giving us all the insight here. And hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, fellas. Thank you.